We are continuing with the Pingala Gita from the 11th canto Srimad Bhagavatam. A very enlightening song, a very memorable song, as we discussed last night. We'll begin with Srimad Bhagavatam 11th canto, chapter 8, the story of Pingala, text 34. Those of you who were here last night remember that you're hearing her realizations. Now that she has experienced a flow of detachment after the madness of material desire, longing for money and acclaim, reputation, frustration set in. And in that moment of frustration, because of having evidently rendered some service to devotees, amidst that frustration sprouted spiritual detachment, not just material detachment. We discussed last night how material detachment is experienced by everyone in moments when things don't go their way. They say, oh, what's the use? What's life all about anyway? It's just a dream. But then, a few moments later, they're back into it again. But the kind of detachment that Pingala is experiencing, because she has some bhakti credit somehow or other, that material frustration became a fertile ground for the seed of bhakti to develop. No doubt some of you here experienced the frustrations of material life. And because of contact with a devotee, your material frustration didn't lead to simply temporary material attachment. Instead, it led to the sprouting of the bhakti lata, the creeper of devotion. So when you hear about Pingala, you have to be able to distinguish between mere temporary material detachment. Oh, it's all useless, what's the point? And the kind of detachment that allows devotion to Krishna to grow. Translation. Certainly, in this city of Videha, I alone am completely foolish. I neglected the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who awards us everything, even our original spiritual form. And instead, I desire to enjoy sense gratification with many men. Om Aganatimanandasya Gyananjana Shalokaya Chakshun Vilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurudeva.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Pingala is expressing a very proper bhakti emotion. Certainly in this whole city, I alone am completely foolish. This is how a real devotee feels. That I alone am missing the great opportunity because I'm not applying myself properly in bhakti. Everyone else is doing better than me. Yet I, who have such a great opportunity, I'm wasting it. She's feeling the ramifications of her bad choices. And she's come to some realizations. You remember last night we discussed how she waited at her door all night for clients. And none came. And this so much astonished her. that she became very mentally altered. She basically entered into an altered state of consciousness out of disappointment and frustration and what's going on. Yesterday I compared the situation to be like that of a famous movie star who people throng to see all her movies, and then she puts out a movie and not one person goes. This is how shocked Pingala was. She couldn't believe it. In her good fortune of having some spiritual realization because of service done in the past to a devotee, she's actually going to be thankful for her circumstances because she can see these circumstances of scarcity, of deprivation, lack of fulfillment, they forced me onto a higher platform. Often it is said in life that a problem is never solved on its own level. And that is indeed true. You have to go to a higher level to solve your problems. Now, how high do you want to go? Srimad Bhagavatam is recommending the ultimate high, the ultimate solution to all your problems. Rather than trying to deal with all your many problems piecemeal, I deal with this problem here, and I'll deal with that problem there, here a problem, there a problem. Scattershot. The bhakti process is one-stop shopping for dealing with problems. Apply your energies to the root of existence, and all your problems are solved. So Pingala realizes the cause of all her problems, the ferocious material desires, the hankering, the greed, the pride. She says, I neglected the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who awards us everything. In other words, I neglected the person who gives everything, and I expected to get something out of material existence. Not only does the Supreme Personality of Godhead give everything, he even gives her original spiritual form. She understood that our natural situation is not one of emptiness, it's not one of impersonalism. Our original natural nature is to have spiritual form, spiritual relationships, spiritual qualities, and spiritual activities. Material existence is a distortion. It's a perversion that we're so attached to. It's amazing. Sometimes we can sit back and analyze the madness of our attachment to the material body and the material world. For what? Sometimes persons speculate after being frustrated in material life. They speculate that the ultimate goal will be to give up your finite existence and become with the infinite, to merge with the infinite. Well, this is impossible. Finite is always finite. Infinite is always infinite. This is the point Krishna makes in Bhagavad Gita. Atvevam jatu nasham tvam neme janam. Never was there a time when the finite was not individual. Never will there be a time. And Krishna says also about himself, never was there a time when the infinite was not an individual, and never will there be a time. So many times Krishna says, never, never, never. Not in the past, not now, and it won't happen in the future. What more do you want? In other words, since your individuality is eternal, you might as well learn how to deal with it. You can't get rid of yourself. You No matter how hard you try, no matter how many suicides you do, you cannot get rid of yourself. So Srimad Bhagavatam is proposing, why not deal with yourself? Not simply in terms of your external coverings of the body and mind, but deal with yourself as you are, spirit, soul, part of Krishna. Deal with yourself in that way. Revive your relationship with Krishna, and then you're natural. Nothing else is going to satisfy you. Careerism won't satisfy you. Money won't satisfy you. Social prestige. Skin stimulations will not satisfy you. To surround yourself with a network of persons who are simply going to fail you because they can't last. Under the influence of time, nothing material lasts. So no matter how hard you try to package your material life, it's not going to work. You can travel here and there, see the sights far and wide. You can change friends this way and that way. And as is so popular today, if you actually do marry, you can change marriage partners right and left. You change locations, change jobs. You will not be fulfilled. You will not be satisfied. So Pingala is recommending to herself that she stop neglecting the real solution, especially since it is the Supreme Personality of Godhead who awards even our original spiritual form. To attain your original spiritual form is real liberation. Mukti hitra yata rupam swarupena avastati. Bhagavatam second canto says that. Real liberation, the real definition of mukti, liberation, is to attain your original spiritual form. Not to lose your individuality and so-called merge with the infinite. No. A devotee considers that hellish because without individuality, how are you going to serve? And without serving Krishna, what do you do? Therefore, it's actually, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains, it's actually worse than being a sense enjoyer if you think that you'll become detached from material life just so you can merge into the Supreme Absolute Truth. At least when you're a sense enjoyer, serving your mind and senses with your individuality, you have some conception that I'm going to use my personhood, my individuality, for service. It's all misdirected, of course, in a hellish way. But to practice detachment from material life, all for the sake of merging into the Supreme Absolute Truth, neglecting service to Krishna, this is a great affront. In other words, in spite of your apparent spiritual detachment, you are averse to the devotional service of Krishna. So in some ways, the acharyas say, better to just be a sense enjoyer. Misuse your individuality rather than seek to obliterate your individuality. Because with your individuality, you can serve Krishna. Just like with it now you are serving Maya, with that same individuality, you can serve Krishna. But in the name of spiritual advancement, to seek to destroy your individuality, which you can't do anyway, and merge into the Supreme, this is rebellious in a different way. I won't serve Krishna, but still. I'll be spiritual. It is impossible. Material life involves service, and spiritual life involves service. So, Pingala is regretting her particular expression of material life. She said, instead of serving Krishna, I desire to enjoy sense gratification with many men. We explained yesterday how actually there's only one male, that is Krishna. Krishna is the Purusha, the only male. Everyone else is female. Everyone else, they are energies meant for Krishna's pleasure. So you should not simply take Pingala as referring only to women. She is the example of all conditioned souls. She goes on with her Gita, her song. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is absolutely the most dear one for all living beings because he is everyone's well-wisher and Lord. He is the Supreme Soul situated in everyone's heart. Therefore, I will now pay the price of complete surrender, and thus purchasing the Lord, I will enjoy with him just like Lakshmi Devi. What is most dear to you? Think about it. There may be family members. There may be partners, husbands, wives, children, most dear to you. But materially speaking, these associates are dear to you because they're in relation to your body. So actually, it's because of the body that you can have bodily relationships. Friendship and so-called love in this world is based on the body. So actually more dear to you than your bodily associates is your own body. Then think deeper. Why is the body so dear to me? Could there be anything more dear than my body? And when we say body, we also include mind. So, what is the difference between a dead body and a living body? There must be something more dear that animates the body, the vital force. So actually, the reason why the body is dear to you is because of the soul. But you go even deeper. Is the soul the ultimate reality? Impersonalists mistakenly believe that. But the soul is part of the Supreme Soul. As Krishna explains, he's the self of the self. So actually, your very soul, the real you, is dear because Krishna is at the root. So Krishna is the most dear to all living entities. Therefore, if you focus your energies on Krishna, you are indeed dealing, you've got your hands on the trigger, so to speak, of the most dear entity. The most dear reality. So that is what bhakti is about. Water the tree by putting the water at the root and all the branches blossom, instead of foolishly trying to water each leaf individually. How it is that Krishna is most dear to us. This is what we want to rediscover. How it is that Krishna is everyone's well-wisher, Suhrit. We want to rediscover that. We are very foolish thinking that well-being means material sense gratification, enjoying material life. That's well-being. But such material happiness compared to a spiritual experience, you can't compare. And this sense of comparison, this sense of valuation and prioritization we get by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, we start to see things in proper perspective. That indeed, material happiness is low grade. It's practically not even worth talking about. Someone may object. Maybe Chanidas, he'll play the role of the objector. But isn't there a little something? You can't just say there's no material happiness. Isn't there a little speck? But who wants to make a claim based on a speck? Like we were discussing yesterday, how the whole world's under the influence of the Pingala principle. Money, money, money. Money affects everything. But I know one person who's not like that. Well, the exception proves the rule. If 99 out of 100 are like that, you say everyone is like that. Basically, you're correct. So, when we say there is no happiness in material existence, you may bring out your speck of material happiness. Wait, what's the point of talking about a speck? You know the example I used to give, haven't given it in a while. You're in the desert, you're dying of thirst. The scorching sun of the Sahara Desert is beating down on your back. You can't even walk anymore. You're crawling through the hot sands, lizards all around you. And your only hope is to find some water. Your tongue is about dried out. Your eyeballs are drying out. And then you hear this sound as you're crawling through the sand, looking desperately for water. You hear the sound of a helicopter. And you raise your, with great difficulty, you raise your eyeballs to the sky and you see a helicopter coming. And on the side of the helicopter, in big letters, it says, water! And the helicopter's coming towards you. You just think what you'd be. I'm saved! A helicopter in the middle of nowhere in the desert is coming to me with water! The helicopter lands nearby you. And a rescue worker comes running out towards you. Oh, how elated you be! And he comes running toward you. I've got water! I've got water! Just wait! Don't die yet! I've got water! There is water in the desert! Here I come! Just stick out your tongue! With your last energy, stick out your tongue. And the rescue worker comes up to you, and he has a spoon in his hand. And on the spoon is one drop of water. Oh, his finger, he just flicks the drop on your tongue. You got water! I tell you, there's water in the desert! So we like to do that about material happiness. No, there is something. I've had a bit of it. We're so miserly and desperate. Prahlad Maharaj says, sukham hitucham. The sukha, the happiness, is okay. You can say it exists, material happiness, but sukham hitucham, it's certainly so insignificant, it's not worth talking about. But we love to talk about it. The whole world is under that spell, that there's something substantial in material happiness. So Pingala, she's come to her senses. And she's saying, I will now pay the price of complete surrender. Now that may sound scary to you, paying the price of complete surrender. It's not going too far. But you are completely surrendered to the illusory energy with your body and mind. You're so completely surrendered to the illusory energy that you don't mind living without understanding what your next destination will be. Isn't that complete surrender? You have no idea what your future will be. after the present body, but you don't care. You've surrendered completely. You have no idea of the outcomes of all your actions in terms of karmic reactions. Karma? I don't see any karma, do you? Do you see any karmic reactions? Can you get an app on your iPhone? You know that. I don't know any karmic reactions. I don't see them. That means complete surrender to the illusory energy. So it's not like it's unusual for us to completely absorb ourselves in something. So Pingala is making a reversal. She's saying, I will now pay the price of complete surrender to Krishna. Now, what does that mean? It means that she'll accept Krishna's plan instead of her plan. It means that she will make the best use of a temporary material body to achieve the highest spiritual purposes. That's paying the price. You already have the wherewithal. You have the financial resources. You have your material body in mind. Now, how are you going to invest your material body in mind? Shall you invest it in pursuing the material illusion, or will you invest it in achieving the eternal, achieving Krishna? So paying the complete price of surrender simply means using your temporary body and mind for the best purpose. That's all. With this tiny, temporary, short human form of life, if you invest it properly, you're paying the price completely. Now just think, for so many births you've been pursuing the illusion, the water in the desert. Now why can't you for just one birth control your senses and pay the price? Instead of paying illusion's price, you pay Krishna's price. Just for one birth. A few years only. So many lifetimes you've thrown yourself away. Now you may say, but sometimes it feels so inconvenient to control your senses and not do this and not do that. Okay, even if that's true, so what? One lifetime? That's all. That's paying the complete price. Simply using your temporary body and mind for the best purpose, as is often said, making the best use of a bad deal. Having a temporary body and mind is a bad deal. But you can make the best use of the bad deal by engaging those temporary mechanisms, contraptions, as Pingala said in the verse we ended with yesterday. As she said, besides me, what woman could be so foolish as to devote herself to this material body, thinking that she might find pleasure and love in this contraption? So there's a best use of the contraption, a best use of the bad deal, and that is to engage in Krishna's service. So Pingala has come to that conclusion. In the next verse of her song, she says, well, this sounds like something a feminist would say. But remember, there's only one real male, that's Krishna. Everyone else is his Shakti, his energy. So don't just take Pingala's words in a restricted gender sense. Although that meaning is there also, but her words have wide application. Men provide sense gratification for women, but all these men, even the demigods in heaven, have a beginning and an end. They are all temporary creations who will be dragged away by time. Therefore, how much actual pleasure or happiness could any of them ever give to their wives? So she's even apparently criticizing Brahma and Indra and the great devas. They also have a beginning and end. What can they do? What could they actually do for their wives? These men creatures have a beginning and end. So what is their value? They're all temporary creations. You can just see them all being dragged away by time. Therefore, how much actual pleasure or happiness could any of them ever give to their wives? She's really cutting to the core. She's getting to the bottom of the illusion. In our dependent relationships, we have to see what the purpose of that dependency is. We have a right as human beings to analyze, what is this relationship doing for my ultimate goal of life? That's not being rude, it's not being utilitarian, it is being true to your real nature. Whether it's a familiar relationship or some kind of friendship or partnership, what is this relationship doing for my progress toward the real goal of life? It is your right and responsibility as a human being to evaluate in that way. It's not being strange, it's not being cruel, it's not being hard. You're being for real. She continues, although I most stubbornly hoped to enjoy the material world, somehow or other detachment has arisen in my heart, and it is making me very happy. Therefore, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, must be pleased with me. Without even knowing it, I must have performed some activity satisfying to him. So we can identify with her autobiography in this Pingala Gita, stubbornly hoping to enjoy the material world. You can feel that in your heart, the stubbornness. I don't care what happens, I'm going to do it, I'm going to get it. I will work, I will slave, I will travel, I will lie. I'll bend, not lie, but bend the truth. I'll bend myself, I'll bend others. I got to taste material happiness. Somehow or other. I'll try this way, I'll try that way. Can you feel that dogged stubbornness in us? I will succeed, I'm going to get it, it's out there. There's money. There's acclaim, there's prestige, there's fulfillment. I want to feel good about myself. I don't want to feel like I'm a loser. I want to feel that I have achieved, I have attained, and I want others to notice that. When I walk into a room, I want people, they don't have to stand up and applaud, but they should at least... So we need to look deep in the core of our heart and see these kind of stubborn desires. Visualize your life. What do you see?
Oh, yeah, I want things to be nice, things to go my way. Some indulgences here and there. I'll also give a little bit to charity, of course. And I just want to be known as a good person, a nice person. And then, when I'm old, after a nice, happy old age, playing with the grandchildren, and having lots of wisdom through old age. Then one night I'll just die in my sleep peacefully. I don't know where I'll be going, but I'm sure the universe will take care of me. The main thing is to be a good person. If you're a good person, according to your definition of being good, certainly good things will come to you. What a tragic life. No intelligent person can live in this way if someone's actually intelligent. The problem is there's so much ignorance masquerading as intelligence. So where are the colleges and universities teaching this essential knowledge? Yes, people have to have their occupations. They need to support their families. But that is not the most important thing. We must understand perspective and priority. So Pingala is addressing the most important thing. She had her occupation. She was tops at her occupation. She was devastatingly beautiful. Remember? Rupam Uttamam. She had the exquisite form of attractiveness. She was attractively dressed, and her bodily gestures were so alluring. So she was at the top of her game. She was at the top of her trade. But she's realizing now, what is the use of that occupation, or any occupation, if it takes the number one position in your life? Now some other desire is arising in her heart. She says, I notice that just detachment coming over me. How could that happen? She recognizes the fact that I'm relinquishing my grip on my material desires. It's not ordinary. I must somehow or other have done something to get the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Otherwise, how could I come to this genuine and deep realization? Not a temporary realization, but a genuine and deep realization of what I should be doing. So her conclusion? The Supreme Personality of Godhead must be pleased with me because I'm slackening my grip on material life. Without even knowing it, I must have performed some activity satisfying to him. Agyata Sukriti. The unknowingly performing an activity that has great benefit for your existence, even though you don't know it. Just some or other coming in contact with a devotee, some or other serving a devotee, some or other doing something to aid devotional service to Krishna. The smallest thing, that is enough to put an eternal credit in your spiritual bank account. So she's thinking, I must have done something like that. Somehow or other, Krishna is pleased with me. And as a result, detachment has arisen in my heart. And not only has the detachment arisen in my heart, but it's making me so happy. She's not talking about dry, artificial renunciation, which occurs on the material platform. When persons try to give up some material activities simply for a better material life. Just like persons who take intoxication. Sometimes they purposely stop for a while, so when they start again, they really feel the kick. Literally, the kick. So that's detachment
but it's not, it's detaching on the material platform. Sometimes when persons get burned out in relationship hunting, they say, that's it, I'm just not pursuing any relationships for a whole year. And so after a year, when I start again, it'll really be, the whole experience will be fresh and detachment on the material platform. But the detachment that Pingala is talking about is in relation to Krishna and his service. And she says it's making her very happy. Because of having contacted a devotee, some other in her past, her situation of intense frustration is leading, it's creating a fertile ground for her bhakti to develop. She's relating her whole situation to Krishna's mercy. And she's condemning herself. What a fool I was. She goes on. A person who has developed detachment can give up the bondage of material society, friendship, and love. And a person who undergoes great suffering gradually becomes, out of hopelessness, detached and indifferent to the material world. Thus, due to my great suffering, such detachment awoke in my heart. Yet how could I have undergone such merciful suffering if I were actually unfortunate? Therefore, I am in fact fortunate and have received the mercy of the Lord. He must somehow or other be pleased with me. So there's a apparently radical concept in this verse. Merciful suffering. It doesn't sound like anything we'd be interested in. Huh? Mercy means no suffering. How could there be such a thing as merciful suffering? Surveys have been done about people going through crises in life, which everyone, one way or another, will, due to things happening to them or things happening to those dear to them. So surveys have been done, psychological surveys, and actually you'd be shocked when people remember the crises that they went through, whether it's health or this, that, or the other, extraordinary misunderstandings. The people always say that, actually, although I'm not thankful for what I went through, I see I came out of it better and learned a lot. So even materialists say like that. I can see that going through all that ordeal brought something to me that I didn't have before. But of course, it's not like they want to go through that again and they're not grateful for it. But they recognize, I picked up some fortitude and determination. I learned some things. So even on the material platform, many people will agree to that. Pingala is talking about something she calls merciful suffering. She's saying, how can I be unfortunate when I had merciful suffering? My suffering, because I have these realizations now, my suffering was actually showing that I'm receiving the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Some or other, he must be pleased with me. Because due to my great suffering, such detachment awoke in my heart. Real detachment. Real detachment means attachment to Krishna's service. Remember how she was practicing her profession and no one came to her door? She was just hopeless, despondent. What's going on? I am a superstar.
Mm-hmm.
highly sought after, highly paid for, and then no one's coming? This was such a shock to her ego. Now she recognizes this kind of hopelessness and suffering was special because real detachment awoke in her heart. She goes on to say, with devotion, I accept the great benefit that the Lord has bestowed upon me. Having given up my sinful desires for ordinary sense gratification, I now take shelter of Him, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So what does it mean to take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? It means to take shelter of His service. Krishna is not different from His service. If you have a healthy service appetite, that means you have a healthy appetite for Krishna. Without a healthy service appetite, how can you say that you are having some desire to please Krishna? Speaking about satisfaction, earlier in the 11th canto, there's a very famous verse, Bhaktir Prayashanu Bhavo. Anyatra Cha. Bhakti gives pleasure, nourishment, and relief from material desires. Just like when you eat good food, you get pleasure, you get nourishment, and freedom from hunger pangs. It's an example given in the 11th canto, and Jiva Goswami comments about it, that it's almost a perfect example, but there's one thing that's not, doesn't add up. When you eat food, you're focused. This is very good. Oh, this is so good. You're really absorbed. But after a while, you lose interest in the food because you're full. Even in taking prasad, let's say there's a big pizza and ice cream feast. And you can just watch the eyes when, you know, the servers come out with these big trays of pizza. And you just think, wow, I can just go on and on, eating tray after tray. What is it that they served at the men's self-improvement festival that everyone felt they could just go on and on eating it?
Bird steaks.
You just go eating one thing. The more they brought out, the more you thought you could eat, right? Still, it came a point. A point came in which you had to say, I can't take anymore. You had to lose interest. Your stomach couldn't hold anymore. Right? So out of biological necessity, you had to lose interest. So then you start talking to the devotees next to you more. And but engaging in Krishna's service never reaches that satiation point. Your concentration on Krishna's service is rewarded by more concentration and more concentration, more absorption. The bhakti yogi who's properly practicing bhakti never loses interest in the subject matter. Whereas in eating the most exquisite curry steaks, at some point you're going to have to lose interest. If someone comes by with a big tray of more curry steaks, no. So, bhakti gives that satisfaction that remains ever fresh. The Bhagavatam says, Tushti Pushti Chut Apaya. Tushti is the satisfaction. And in bhakti also gives pushti, nourishment. Just like when you eat healthy food, you become energized. So devotional service energizes your quest to please Krishna. First of all, it gives you satisfaction, and then it nourishes you in your spiritual pursuit. And then, shut-apaya, it relieves you from, bhakti relieves you from material hankering. Just like you've been hungry, you eat some good food, you're no longer kicked by stomach pangs. You can experience on a fast day, especially on a fast day till the evening, hunger pangs start to get to you. But as soon as you take the feast, your hunger pangs are gone. So simply by service to Krishna, the pangs of material desires go away. Now you have to be patient about that. As I was explaining to someone today, you spent so many lifetimes in Maya. Can't you be a little patient to spend some years cleaning yourself up, tolerating the diminishing kicks of material desire? The best way to get rid of an unwanted guest is don't feed the guest. The guest gets to him pretty quick. So, we don't feed material desires, and simultaneously we engage in Krishna service. Life is not that long, you know. A few years of tolerance. Okay, even if you call it inconvenience, controlling your senses. And there may be some rough patches where you have to tolerate. Nevertheless, it's such a short time. So now Pingala is counting it as a blessing. She went through such a hopeless crisis. She said, therefore, I'm in fact fortunate, and I've received the mercy of the Lord. Her song, her Gita, goes on. With devotion, I accept the great benefit that the Lord has bestowed upon me. Having given up my sinful desires for ordinary sense gratification, I now take shelter of Him, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I am now completely satisfied, and I have full faith in the Lord's mercy. Therefore, I will maintain myself with whatever comes of its own accord. I shall enjoy life with the Lord only because He is the real source of love and happiness. So she's laying out her occupational plan. Devotees often ask, what about work? What about career? So she's laying out her career plans here. I will maintain myself with whatever comes of its own accord. How do you know when you're doing that? You're just living simply based on what comes of its own accord. Does that mean you just sleep all day and whatever comes of its own accord? No, it means you endeavor according to your particular occupational engagement, but you don't endeavor in such a way that your spiritual life is threatened or put on the back burner. You always keep your priorities straight. And if you do that, then you can say, my situation has come of its own accord. And everything is individual. You can't look at what others have and think, well, that devotee has this, why can't I have it? Devotees have different karmic backgrounds. And also Krishna knows how to personally treat each devotee so that the devotee makes maximum spiritual advancement. So for one devotee, it may mean having some things. For another devotee, it means losing those things. Krishna knows how to orchestrate the whole situation for attaining the real luxury, his service. Some devotees they're bringing in different karma. So therefore it seems they get money easier than other devotees. You have to be able to live with all that. And see in your individual circumstances what's coming to you of its own accord, regardless of what's coming to someone else. Not that,
well, all the other householders have this, why can't we have it?
Every family is different. The man and woman, they're bringing their own set of karmic influences to the table, so to speak, and it is different from another family's. One family has money but not health. The other family has health but not money. One family wants children but can't have children. But the family has money. The other family has children but doesn't have money. It's just up, down, and all around. One man has a great job, but he has a wife who's on his case all the time. Another man has a very peaceful life. One of those rare, low-maintenance ones. But he has got a tough job with a tough boss. So you can't win them all in this world. One family has it all. Money, health, children. But because of the man's job, they have to live in the middle of nowhere. There's no devotees there. Another family, they live in one room. But they have the blessings of devotee association all the time. So you can't generalize. And you can't beat each other up. That family has... When are you going to get married? Look how they're living. What about us? You can't do that. It's all so many permutations and combinations. What you can do, though, is see how Krishna is blessing each devotee. That's what you want. Those are the luxuries you want. You want the opulence of bhakti. And Krishna knows how to alter circumstances to produce that ultimate luxury. And the circumstances can be so different from one family to another, one individual to another. So understanding how Krishna deals with each individual devotee to achieve the real goal in life, that's real vision. Otherwise, you'll become bewildered. Even devotees, when they don't understand this, that family has all those things. Why don't we have it? Well, can you get it? Can you endeavor? Is it possible in such a way that it's not artificial, meaning that you don't compromise your spiritual life? Some devotees, just by moving their finger, just money falls out of the sky. Other devotees, they can jump up and down nonstop for 24 hours and not one penny comes. So you have to see how, in your circumstances, in your individual circumstances, what comes to you based on your endeavors that don't compromise your spiritual development. So even sometimes amongst the society of devotees, the peer thing, you know, is taken in the wrong way. Instead of looking at others to see how to be inspired in serving Krishna, you look and see, well, those householders, they have this and that, and they bought a house, or they did this, or they have three cars, or... Whatever you do, don't make your spiritual development less than number one priority. And see then what comes to you endeavoring in that way. That's being peaceful. A peaceful devotee is not agitated by the variegatedness in devotee living situations. Otherwise, you'd never be peaceful. You'd always be beating up on yourself. Or your husband or wife will be beating up on you. Get this, get that. They bought a house in Mayapur. When are we going to get it? Buy a house in Mayapur. Everyone has to learn how to be peaceful about their legitimate circumstances. And how do you know when your circumstances are legitimate? Not that you're lazy. Oh, we just don't do anything. We just sleep all day and what comes of its own accord. Remember what Pingala said? You have to endeavor with responsibility. But you know when something is an over-endeavor, when it compromises or threatens your number one priority. So Pingala has laid out her program now for the future. She says, I am now completely satisfied. I have full faith in the Lord's mercy. Therefore, I will maintain myself with whatever comes of its own accord. I shall enjoy life with only the Lord, and because He is the real source. Because He is the real source of love and happiness. So we can learn so much about how to be truly peaceful by studying her song. She's dealing with the raw emotional dynamics of frustration, hopelessness, in the face of such intense material desires. She knew she was going to get it. She had no doubt she could score. Completely confident in material nature. I am Pingala. Everyone knows my price. Someone's going to come and pay it. And she took pride in her craft. She thought it was very social and convivial. And she thought it was fun being sought after. Connecting with so many men, charming them, flattering them, and she had a real mission in life. She had a reason to live. But now, all the air has gone out of the tire. Her realizations at the end of her song are going to be about time, and that's something we should never forget. Remember Muchukunda's, King Muchukunda's famous line in his autobiography that he presented to Krishna. I forgot about time, but time did not forget about me. At the right moment, just like a snake pounces on a frog and gobbles it up, time struck. So Pingala says, the intelligence of the living entity is stolen away by activities of sense gratification, and thus he falls into the dark well of material existence. Within that well, he is then seized by the deadly serpent of time. Who else but the Supreme Personality of Godhead could save the poor living entity from such a hopeless condition. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, there's no way you're getting out of this condition except with his help. You're going to be as smart as the smartest, as beautiful as the beautiful, as strong as the strongest, but you won't get out of material existence without learning how to depend on Krishna. So she describes here a two-step process. You fall into the dark well of material existence, and then once you're at the bottom of the well, a deadly serpent bites you. So within the dark well of material existence, time, like a serpent, sinks its fangs into you. She goes on about time. When the living entity sees that the entire universe has been seized by the serpent of time, he becomes sober and sane, and at that time detaches himself from all material sense gratification. In that condition, the living entity is qualified to be his own protector. So this is the Bhagavatam's criticism of ordinary society. Ordinary society cannot see that the entire universe has been seized by the serpent of time. It can't see the whole universe existing within the jaws of that serpent. The bhakti yogi, as his or her vision matures, you'll be able to see all of society, the whole world in that way, caught in the jaws of the great serpent of time. And automatically then, you'll be sober and sane, and you'll be detached. So Pingala's conclusion is, when you attain this level, then finally you are qualified to be your own protector. Otherwise, what can you do for yourself? What to speak of doing something for someone else? If you want to be your own protector, if you truly want to be able to depend on yourself, then you have to come up to this platform of seeing the whole world in the jaws of the great serpent of time. And that realization, that perception, makes you sober and sane. So you see, the Bhagavatam's standard for what is a genuinely civilized person is far different from today's standard. That's why today's society, from the Bhagavatam point of view, is considered primitive. So that was the last of Pingala's Gita, as relayed by the Brahmana to King Yadu, and that whole dialogue is being relayed by Lord Krishna himself to Uddhava, his dear devotee. So we get to the end. The Avaduta said, thus, her mind completely made up, Pingala cut off all her sinful desires to enjoy sex pleasure with lovers, and she became situated in perfect peace. Then she sat down on her bed. It's been a long night, and she's gone through many changes. Now it's early in the morning. No customers, but she's got a brand new outlook on life, which she attributes to the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So then we end with the verse we began with yesterday. Remember yesterday we said we would begin with the end. Material desire is undoubtedly the cause of the greatest unhappiness, and freedom from such desire is the cause of the greatest happiness. Therefore, completely cutting off her desire to enjoy so-called lovers, Pingala very happily went to sleep. Hare Krishna.